Welcome to the Better World of Work podcast by Talent. I'm your host, Ian Tyler, Talent's Group Chief Strategy Officer. Today, we're going to be talking all things modern leadership and modern work with Mark Kruth from Atlassian. So this morning, I am talking about modern leadership in a modern world with modern companies. So let's have a little dig deeper into what that really means. So leading modern organizations is so much more than allowing work from home and flexible work policies. But what else is required for leaders and people within companies to either stop doing or start doing? I think a really interesting quote from today's guest could be as simple as things like make meetings suck less. So Mark, welcome, and let's have a conversation about modern work. And what does all this mean?
Ian, I'm so excited to be here. And your question around modern work is one everybody has. Like, what does this modern work even mean? And, you know, currently at Atlassian, I hold the title of modern work evangelist. And what does that mean? It means I'm going out there and talking about how do we get work done today? I think one of the things prior to the pandemic, one of the things that many of us observed was there's a big hype around what's the future of work look like? How do we think about like what's going to be like in 2030? And then of course the pandemic hit and it showed us that none of us knew what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. We all kind of had ideas and then all of a sudden it says, hey, we've got a different plan for you. And the thing is we got thrust into the future and it was a future we weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly, you know, again, we can guess all we want, but modern work is going to be then saying, well, cool, we're here. What do we do now? What do we do in this age? And that's where, for me, I think one of the big things is, and I've always done throughout my career, so I've spent my career focusing in on what I would consider the pragmatic things we can do to get better. Modern work, when you take off the window dressing, it's all about how do you get a little bit better in the current situation you're in? And that goes back to that idea of like, how do you make meetings suck less? Because guess what? Meetings have sucked since, you know, 1950s, whenever the idea of a meeting came around. Let's get better at that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you touch on a whole range of things there. So I wouldn't mind picking on you a little bit in terms of how does Mark or even anybody who's listening to this become a modern work designer and an evangelist, certainly within what is one of the most globally recognizable software companies like Atlassian? I mean, tell us about your journey.
It's kind of been interesting, and it's almost like, I don't know, it is one of those like pinch me moments where I'm like, am I really doing this right now? You know, like, this is cool. Like, I never thought I would get here, because I'll tell you what, I started out my career back, what was that, about 12 and a half years ago. I came out of university and I started going through and trying out some different jobs. I actually started working as a programmer, did a little bit of programming, tried out a few other things like project management. Ultimately, I found a love for what we would consider agile software development. So in that realm, one of the things I found was that in agile, we focus very much on how do we work together? How do we collaborate, solve problems rapidly? You know, prototyping, you know, iterative design, these sorts of things. I absolutely love the atmosphere it created and how we can actually solve problems versus letting things just build out over time. And so from those early days, I spent a lot of time working with different organizations around the country and specifically in the US, but also places around the world, helping them think about how do they work a little bit differently from a technology perspective. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I started using early on in my career was Atlassian products. You know, it was one of those things where I think it was back in like 2010. I remember using Jira with Greenhopper, you know, trying to help my agile teams do things just a little bit better. And so as I continued using it, I always used Atlassian products to kind of help me do things a little differently. Really what I did is I tried to use it to help me be more efficient in some of the things. Yeah. I knew I could apply my practices to it. Now, how do we get a little bit better? Fast forward a few more years. I found myself at Atlassian. Again, dream job. I was working with large enterprises to help them think about how do they work differently by applying some of our products and really trying to solve the enterprise problem. But the one thing I always had a passion about around that I still felt there was a need for was this idea of how do we apply the way we work to to things like the tools we work from. Because what is it? UML creator Grady Bosch has this great quote that says, "A fool with a tool is still a fool." And it couldn't be, you know, couldn't be more true. I mean, I see, I hear absolutely. The laughs. You were like, I get that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so for me, it was like, how do we focus in on some of those practices? And so for me, one of the big things has been is how do we find new ways to unlock those practices in teams? And the best way I found to do that was, let's go talk to them about that. Let's actually go. And then once we've gone through the practices, then let's start layering the tools. All of a sudden, I start talking with some of the folks internally, and they're like, hey, yeah, this is actually an area we want to invest some time in. Mm. And over the last 6 months, I actually worked as what we're calling this new part of Atlassian called the team doctors. Yeah. We're very focused on how do we work with our customers to think about practices. And then from there, I said, I want to go talk to more people about this. And so my new boss, Don Price, was actually looking for some people to help with that. And I said, yes, I would love to go out there and start talking to some of our customers. Yeah. I'd love to go out there and start talking to others about how we apply practices out there. So, that, you know, long story short, it's been a whirlwind of a journey. And for anyone who listened out there that's like, how's your path to get to that? There is no path. My path was follow my passions, what got me up in the morning, and then just keep following that. And it was amazing what new places I went to along that journey.
Yeah. So do you think, and this is where it gets interesting for me, because there is no path that is well trodden. And Dom's path to that was almost like an accidental experiment as well. Does it mean that organizations need to think like this more broadly to give people the opportunities to take those paths and stumble across something? Because that requires a little bit of leadership and management bravery.
100%.
And you're 100%. Exploring a little bit of the unknown. And and I find that interesting, because if it's a new role for an individual and a new kind of venture for an organization, to then start to evangelize and go out and speak to other organizations, it's like, are we all feeling around in the dark, or are we all quite comfortable that we kind of know where this thing is going?
And it's interesting. I'd love to hear what you've seen out there too. I'll say that one big piece that I've found is in some of the companies I've worked for, very structured in terms of like what your job is. And I think one of the things I've seen, and I've worked with organizations that help do, and Atlassian is really good at, is this idea of, let's talk about what skills you've got and how do we want to develop those skills. So it becomes less about a title. And yeah, I've got a title, but it becomes a lot more about, hey, what are you good at? What do you want to become good at? One thing for me was always, honestly, I always loved, I fell in love with things like public speaking back, 6 years ago. And so I found myself in a role where I'm like, all right, what are the skills I bring to the table? And all of a sudden they said, all right, love for practices and process, love for speaking, love for just trying new things, a lot of exploration, a lot of curiosity. They said, hey, you know what? We have a need over here that needs some of these skills. You interested in doing that? Those are how I've seen a lot of people start falling into roles here, because we've very much focused on less of like, I need a project manager 3, and more of, I need someone who's going to be very astute and knowledgeable in this space. Yeah. And so that has been super beneficial for us as we've started to grow really large, to think about less about the titles and more about the skills. What about you? What have you seen out there, Ian? What have you done in your organization?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic way to look at things. And firstly, what do I see is exactly you've just described. It's organizations are now turning on to a skills force rather than a workforce, right? So of course we need humans by and large to come and still do the job, certainly as it relates to human engagement, certainly the way that people are thinking about outputs rather than managing the individual contribution per se. It's about what are they doing, what are they forming, what are the teams they're forming part of, and therefore they're hiring for that skill taxonomy more so than probably the last 5 years. That's certainly something that's occurring. overlay the job title with that, all of a sudden you put the box in and around that skill base, which is really interesting as a notion, because certainly as a global technology recruitment business and services organization that we are, our entire taxonomy of recruitment is wedded into job family skill sets. We recruit software engineers with a particular programming language. So there are those boxes that people have to live in, or do they? You know, and there's a question. Is that, right? is that a modern structure? And I'll flip the question back to you, which is, so if throughout your path of evangelism and the organizations that you're now talking more to and about these things, what are you seeing? What outside of Atlassian now in the kind of bigger, broader world, are companies really turning onto this?
So I think some companies are. Some companies are still trying to, are struggling, you know, to kind of find their way. I think one of the big indicators that at least I've seen that's been drawing towards this is things like, a lot of people, of course, are moving to new jobs. A lot of people are looking for, you know, what's the next thing? Because maybe they're lacking fulfillment in their current work, or maybe just not engaged in what they do. And it has to do with the fact that they took a job that was a role and not a passion area, not a skill set for them. So a lot of companies are starting to say, well, what are the skills that we need versus just that job title? Now, the interesting thing, and this is where, like, you think about like modern recruiting and talent and those sorts of things, the whole area of like jobs, titles, family, like job families, that is ingrained in that industry. And so it's very interesting to watch, you know, as whether it be internal recruiting groups or external recruiting groups, try to figure out how do we play here. And again, I don't think anyone has truly solved it yet. Last thing, we still use titles, but what we do now is when we have those conversations with a candidate, we're starting to talk a lot more about, you know, what are the things that, you know, we think that is needed to be successful here with them. We're talking about what are the things they bring to the table versus like, do you have experience in A, B, C, and D? You know, we really want to understand what drives their passion, what skills they're trying to develop versus what do we need, and using, you know, current infrastructure as a mechanism to get there, but really trying to drive the conversation a little differently. So I think that's probably where we're still at the cusp of some of that. You know, it's going to take a while, but it's how we, you know, I like to use the word intent, how we intentfully look at those conversations when we're starting to talk to candidates, as we're starting to go through and say, hey, do we want to bring someone here who's looking for a title? Or are they trying to be here because they want to do a really cool job?
That leads me into one of the things that I know that you talk about externally and internally with Atlassian around holacracy. So if you think about that in the context of what we're talking about around skills and teams and job titles and that kind of stuff, and then you think about the system of holacracy, which obviously, I mean, and you can talk about this better than I can, but that kind of decentralized leadership and kind of self-organization, I mean, how does that all fit together?
That was a really interesting one. And I am a big fan of these ideas of like self-management. And like you said, I've talked about it a lot. And I think when we think about like, what is the future, like what is things like how we bring someone into an organization, or what is like my role now, if all of a sudden now we're self-managing, we're decentralized, there's no longer levels. That's actually something that at least in holacracy-based structures or sociocracy or what have you, one of the big things they focus on there is that kind of self-identification. What do you want to be? What is that self-definition of that? And so I think, and I'll be honest, somebody who is looking for a title, they're going to struggle in a holacracy-based environment, because it really is about how do we collaborate together versus how am I climbing a chain? And so I think the future of like something like a holacracy, those sorts of areas, it's a little bit of a utopia. It's a little bit of a thing that says, hey, if I'm going to put that little bit of my brain that's very selfish, you know, I forgot what it is, but that part of the brainstem that's like, hey, I got to be selfish and look out for myself. If I can put that aside, things like holacracy work out really well. But the thing is we're bags of emotions. You know, we make irrational decisions. You know, it's one of those things where it makes it very difficult to hit to that utopia. But I think things like holacracy and others can give us some really cool road signs. or how do we start maybe working a little differently? And that goes into things like, hey, maybe my job title isn't as much of a thing. Instead, maybe I need to say, a great example of a company who does some self-practice areas or self-management kind of things is Morningstar tomatoes out of the US. And one of the things they do is they create these ideas of clues. They're colleague letter of understanding. And what it is, it's basically me saying to my colleagues, this is who I am and what I bring to the table for us this time. Like something like that is like, oh, that's revolutionary. I don't have to go whole holacracy or anything. But if I put that in place, talk about changing the mindset around what my role is in an organization. Mm-hmm. Talk about my ownership at that point. So I don't know. What have you talked to people who played with the holacracy? What have you seen as you maybe nibbled on that idea out there, especially in the talent space?
Yeah, and do you know what? I go back to something I mentioned before about bravery. I think there are many organizations. I mean, the whole holacracy concept is not a new thing. It's been around for a while, but it's the experiments that organizations have done, much like the introduction a number of years back now with the concept of the 4-day work week. And if you think about that in its kind of looser construct, you could say, well, there's essentially a degree of holacracy that relates to that, because there's self-organization, there's internal social contracts, there's, you know, having expectations on one another. But essentially, the people within the team and or the construct or the business unit self-organizing and holding each other account to outputs, as opposed to a physical presence in an office on a certain number of days, et cetera. So we're seeing organizations, certainly in the Asia Pacific region, leaning right into that. It's not necessarily a new thing in the US and across the UK and European markets in which we operate. It's really starting to be adopted, those types of things. So I think that would be my vantage point that I've got on that. But with the
I think that's a really interesting piece too, is that aspect of like the practices you're talking about, like some of that decentralization. Like, to me, I think those are the biggest things to pull out of that. You know, it's like, how do we get, you know, how do we release some of the power back to the teams to allow them to help kind of figure out what's going to work best for them, whether I'm a knowledge worker sitting at a desk somewhere with a bunch of people, or I'm working an assembly line, you know, manufacturing X kind of products. The more I can figure out, hey, you're closer to the work, you know the work, I should let you make decisions around some of the work as long as you have that intent in mind.
Yeah.
That's to me like how we get to things like, ultimately, what does the future of an organization look like? It's those little practices in there.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I would say by and large, I have this sense now, post-pandemic, if I'm able to kind of say that in inverted commas, that organizations, irrespective of industry and sector, are more open to experimenting. And I feel that organizations are now in a situation where they're much more inclined to give their people a bloody good listening to. And then acting on some of that stuff. And that's really encouraging. So, you know,
one thing that's interesting with that, it's based on, I was doing some research recently around things like engagement, is that one interesting thing a lot of companies are finding themselves into. And I think at this point, to your point, they're learning to experiment quickly and they're learning to listen to their people. But one of the things that we're still seeing some problems around is this idea of, I've listened to you, now what? Like, and what am I doing about that? And so like, you're actually starting to see, we've been climbing in like employee engagement for the last, you know, 10 years. And just this last year, we saw the first dip in a long time. And and it's attributed to the fact that we're like, we've asked people, and that's the thing, we've asked people, step one, good. Step two, we do something about it. And we're starting to struggle because we don't know how to act. They say we need better clarity on our work. Well, crap, how do we do that? You know? And I think that's something where like the modern organization has to get their hands around that. How do we both talk, but then also do at the same time?
So let's unpack that a little bit more, because I think that for me is really where that's where the rubber hits the road. It's like running an engagement survey, as you say. Great, we're really engaged. Now what?
Exactly. Yay.
Awesome. Yeah. Go us. Here's the pin of honor. Do we get a cup with that? I mean, what now?
Yeah, no, right, exactly.
Yeah. So the notion of that, and leaders out there that may be listening to this, and it has happened in other podcasts where people have reached out and asked to be introduced to, you know, different people that we've had on the podcast, and it'd be like, I'd love to get 10 minutes with that person. Can you do an introduction or whatever? And people get really intrigued by not necessarily the what, it is more the how. And I'm not asking you to give away the keys to the kingdom here, but more about, like, what are you seeing in some businesses that are doing the listening well and then applying the change or applying the modern work thinking or practice around experimentation?
I think it goes, one of the biggest things I've seen out there, and one of the things we encourage out there, like part of the practices that I'm out there talking about with companies, is something that we do at Atlassian, which is really cool, is, you know, we do these engagement surveys. So even at Atlassian, we do a monthly engagement survey, kind of understand, you know, hey, how are things? Where are you struggling? Where are you not? And our management teams get that data. And so one of the big things that we try to do, and our management teams have been really fairly good at this, is going out there and saying, all right, we don't have to solve this for your whole organization. But hey, you know, Mark, you're a manager of these 10 people. Go work with your people to figure out what's one thing you can change. And, you know, based on that feedback, I think a lot of times what I've seen is that all of a sudden you get that first survey back. And it comes with like a big old list of like, here, they're struggling here. Oh, things are great here, but you could use some improvement here. And it's almost this, you almost kind of get paralyzed being like, do I got to do all these things? When instead we say, no, this is just like we would do in software teams. We're going to retrospect. We're going to find one item. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to try an experiment around that. And so one of the things we've encouraged our leaders to do, I encourage our customers to do, and you're starting to see this with customers, is they're taking that data. And now they're doing, you know, again, these small experiments. You don't have to change your business overnight kind of thing. Be like, well, crap, we've got to fix the engagement. So we've got to introduce X new practice across everybody. And so giving teams that ability and, you know, to actually do those small experiments has been huge. And the thing is we have to be able to then go in and give those leaders essentially the autonomy to go change some of those things and really think about, again, what's in their sphere of influence? What can they do to help their teams? And so that I think that's been the big thing we've done, like whether it be things like one thing we ended up doing was we ran an engagement survey here at Atlassian with a number of teams. And after that, it says, you know what, we need to dig deeper. And so they would go in and they would run things like our health monitors that we have at Atlassian. It's on our playbook. And so we'd run a health monitor. And then we say, all right, based on that, looks like, you know, we're really struggling here with maybe some shared understanding, or maybe some of our rituals are out of whack. And then they say, okay, let's go and one of my favorite things to do is let's do a ritual reset. Let's take a look at our meetings and figure out what's working, what's not. And all of a sudden, what was a problem, what was causing us to maybe not feel so empowered, about an hour and a half later, now we're like, oh, cool, we could change something. That's kind of novel. So I think that's the biggest thing, is small incremental changes that the team feels that they can own. So what are some of the things you do in your organization to kind of help with that kind of thinking of engagement, thinking of how do I own that improvement?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the rituals that we have, and, you know, unashamedly, the pandemic pushed us to be a much better communicator as an organization than we were before. And I say that unashamedly because I think the truth will be said of many organizations around that. So communicate, and listen, and then do. So our global CEO, Mark Nielsen, has been phenomenal at that, where he runs rituals. It's all hands meetings every 2 weeks. There is a real cadence around that. And then there's a lot of change within those types of meetings. So as you don't always know exactly what you're going to get. So there's an element of insight, surprise, and those which actually mean that, you know, when you jump on the Zoom or you're in a room, the crowd is always big. And it's not just because, you know, it's our CEO talking. It's because sometimes that's where you're going to get some information that you ain't going
to
hear.
You're being really intentful about those meetings, right? 100%. You're being like, hey, we need to be able to add some of that whimsy, but we also need to make sure, you know, it's communicating something. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes something like that super successful. Instead of just saying, hey, every 2 weeks we're having an all hands meeting, join and we'll share you some information. You're very intentful with it. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the other things that, again, we've spoken about on this podcast before is about the art and science of communication, which is meeting people where they're at, consuming information, how they want to consume it, getting the right medium to make sure that every pocket of the organization is aware and actually wants to participate in those types of updates and collaborations and so on. But that's an example of some of the things that we've done. And I know for a fact from speaking to the organizations that I do that every organization is changing the way that they communicate and collaborate. You know, just for example, this that we're doing now, you're in Detroit in the US, I'm in Sydney, mm-hmm. Australia. We're having a conversation about modern work, about, you know, really blowing up this concept of future of work. It's now, it's real. That whole kind of notion of future of work kind of is a little bit irritating because everyone got it wrong.
exactly.
And that's why I'm really intrigued by the work that you do and you know, this conversation more so. If I may indulge myself and jump a little bit into this notion of future work again, but in terms of leadership, and I touched on before about bravery. And leaders being brave to take these experiments and do new things. What are some of the things that outside of the rituals and the kind of communication that we kind of have to constantly evolve? It's never done. It's just a constantly mm-hmm. evolving. But what are you seeing organizations do better?
I think one of the big things, and I think it goes back into actually the concept of leadership, is really focusing on what leadership should be versus what it has been. A lot of times organizations have found, especially, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, you would take someone who is an expert doer, they want to rise up the ranks, all of a sudden, cool, I'm going to be a people leader. And the thing is when we were all together in one place, somebody could play people leader, but then through osmosis, you know, all in the one place, you could kind of have your people development happening. You know, I remember I had leaders like that in the past that were very much expert doers. They didn't really focus on my development, but I had some really great team members that just working with them helped me think about my development. Well, now fast forward, everything's remote for a few years. And now I literally have a person I'm talking to, you know, about my development, about where I'm trying to grow, what I'm trying to do. And so what it's really done is it kind of pushed that concept of what is actually a leader's job to the forefront. Because, you know, what's the age old saying? You know, people don't leave companies, they leave bad bosses. And so as people have started to find, especially being given some ability to now be a little bit more mobile than they used to be, with, you know, being able to be remote in jobs, also seeing things of like, what could I be doing out in the world to make an impact? Now, people are asking hard questions to their leaders, being like, how am I making an impact? What am I trying to do? I want to talk about my well-being. I want to talk about how our company is, you know, trying to change parts of the world. Managers have had to really step up their game to actually think about, do I really want to do this job? Because again, beforehand, it was cool. That was how I rise up the ranks. Now, that leader is looked at for a lot more, really looked at for things like, how do we develop people, which honestly is what leadership always needed to be, but struggled to get there. And so I've seen a lot of companies, Atlassian included, we doubled in size over the last two years. We had to put a big focus in on how do we develop our leaders? You know, we're bringing up a lot of new people. How do we do that? Because we realize that folks are, you know, these folks who are coming into these spots might be really good at their job, but in our world, it doesn't matter that much that you're really a really good software engineer. My best boss I have had in a very long time was my first one here at Atlassian. he told me when I remember joining, he says, I have no idea what you do. You know, like, I really don't understand, you know, a lot of the enterprise agility space and things like that, but I do understand people. And my goal here is to help you be as successful as possible. I mean, talk about a glass of nice, you know, refreshing water right there. I mean, tell me about it, right? And so those Absolutely. Are some of the things that you're starting to see people try to focus on developing. What is that new, how do we develop that leadership muscle in these new leaders?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because, you know, there is also this this notion out there, certainly in organizations, and, you know, I think I'm one of them personified in terms of my role at Talent, but there are leaders out there that might not necessarily be the best software engineer, but leading a software engineering group because they are amazing leaders. But conversely, mm-hmm. the opposite can be true, which is they're an amazing software engineer, but they're mm-hmm. really a poor people leader. But because mm-hmm. they're brilliant at the software engineer, the old structure has said, well, we need to promote them through the ranks. And therefore, mm-hmm. they hold this title back to the thing that we were talking about before. And it's like, well, actually, no. Can we just not do that anymore? Because you're absolutely right. You know, you've got to have the right people, and therefore the learning around leadership needs to evolve mm-hmm. and change. And, you know, that's complicated. But is it? Yeah, but is it? It's like the notion mm-hmm. of it's quite simple. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's simple, but not easy.
Well, it goes right back to our first conversation, first part of the conversation around skills versus titles. And it goes back to this whole piece where, you know, a lot of times, like if we dissect the problem, you know, we think about it, it's like, all right, cool. You know, people want to grow in seniority. They wanted to maybe make more money. They want to do these things. And, you know, where the only option for that was before? Management. That's okay. That's I hit a ceiling. Now I have to climb this part of the ladder. I don't want to, but you know what? There's a bit of me that I want to continue to grow. And so for us, many organizations have to think about how they reinvent that. And it doesn't necessarily mean saying create a technical track for folks. Now this goes back down to the skills development. Start focusing on what kind of skills you want to and reward for things like you've been building mastery in these areas. Awesome. You know, if you're a master across these six different skill sets, that might represent something where, hey, maybe now you get a pay boost or something like that, because you're becoming an expert who can then go out there and grow others or something to that effect. That's where I think we can reimagine some of this without saying, well, the only pathway's here, because there's some people I know that absolutely are amazing people leaders that, you know what, they were destined that path. Like those are the skills they're really good at, their empathy, their collaboration, the communication. And then there's folks who are really good at like the technical angles or what have you. And so how do we lean into what people are passionate and good at and then help them self-identify where they want to grow?
Yeah. You just rattled off a couple of competencies there around, you know, empathy and compassion and so on.
Yeah.
I don't think you give me any good leader from history to now, I don't think those fundamentals have really changed. You know, I find that really interesting. Empathetic leadership, you know, people who can collaborate, people who can communicate. Isn't that just a really good hallmark of people being good leaders?
Oh, 100%. Well, and I think it's interesting is you have to look at too, like the second part of every leadership story. I think that's the big thing. So you look at like the success, and the thing is, you're like, oh wow, that was a great leader there. And then you look at, you know, and then what happened next? You know, if all of a sudden you find, cool, we released this thing, or we did this thing, and all of a sudden now, like half our organization exited, or things like that. You can have these leaders who are going out there, and they will, you know, they will get people, you know, get things done through pushing people through walls versus lifting them over. And I think that's one of the big things that we've got to always keep conscious of is like, how do we make sure that we've got, you know, that it's not just the end of the story of that success, but what happened later? Like, how do people now talk about it? And I think that's where it's funny. Values in an organization is a great example of this, is where values, you know, every organization has their values, you know, those things that they hold up or they etch on their walls, you know. But the thing is there's this idea of aspired values and enacted values. And the idea of an aspired one is like, oh, I want to do that, but I don't have any good stories of it. And an enacted one is like, oh, I have a good story about that. we have to have those enacted stories of our leaders to actually say, well, that was good leadership there, because afterwards we always like, here's an example of where that continued happening.
Mm. And organizations that celebrate those stories,
yes.
I think it is, again, it's starting to happen more and more and more. The more, like, if we take the banking sector, you know, what 25 years ago may have been seen as stuffy and elitist and all the rest of it, you know what? They're coming back down to more tech scale up vibes to, mm-hmm. you know, really kind of getting into this, you know what? We're good and we're celebrating these stories, and we work with, you know, at the pointy end of what makes the world go round in terms of money and happiness and fulfillment and all these wonderful things. That's great. But that whole sector has changed so much to be an organizational structure that is now more reminiscent of tech scale-ups and tech mm-hmm. startups. And I find that really interesting. And they celebrate leadership stories in such a good way that I'm finding through different conversations, more so than they have done in the last 25 years.
And you know what the key to that is? So there's one word that I think is the key to all of that. So what do you think it is? There's one word.
Evolution.
I would put that right in there with it. I was thinking of behaviors. Mm. And it's that, how do we change behaviors in an organization? And honestly, that's the game of modern work in my mind, is behaviors. How do we think about those things that we want to change in our organization? Because, you know, whether I flatten my hierarchy or whether I decentralize my decision making, if I don't change my behaviors around those sorts of things, the things that the leaders, the behaviors that my leaders demonstrate, and they share what they do, they share stories. It's things through, like, sharing those success stories of leadership is a way of expressing a behavior. And so all of a sudden now people are like, oh, cool, we promote this behavior. I like that. And so now I do it, and then you do it, and then a bunch of us start doing it, and it starts becoming part of what our company is known for. It's about our culture then. And so for me, I find that, you know, modern tech's a great, or like banking is a great example where there was this aspect that they said, you know what, we have to change the way we work. And it wasn't a agile transformation or a digital transformation that changed the way they work. What they ultimately ended up doing was saying, well, we have to change how we react to things, how we treat our people around things, and what do we celebrate, you know, mm-hmm. those sorts of things. And all of a sudden you see through those little things like that, organizations all of a sudden become like, wow, you look at a bank, you're like, you're a bank? Like, really? You yeah. know, I'm actually working, I'm doing a talk with a group. They're a bank, and one of the things they're doing is, like, they're doing a tech, like an innovation week right now. And one of the things they did is they had this idea, this portal to submit all these new ideas for, like, innovation within their tech space. And they were only expecting like 3 or 4 ideas, and they got 50 of them. And that was a sign that the behaviors that they were trying to encourage around innovation was actually working, because they were like, wow, people felt open. They wanted to contribute ideas versus just being like, all right, cool, there's just an option to do it. So I love seeing how those little things like that can kind of help feed the system and feed the way an organization actually works.
Yeah, absolutely. And it nourishes the organization to go, yes. You know what? I'm going to put my hand up here. I'm going to give it yes. a go. I'll submit an idea, even though I might be doing negative self-talk and saying that's crap, that's not going to fly. But actually, you know, it's that behavior, you're absolutely right, that encourages that transformation, that evolution as a result of that. So
yep
absolutely. Just conscious that we're kind of coming to the end of our time together, Mark, and if there's a couple of takeaways that you would like our listeners to kind of sit there and ponder on and sit with the problem on for a moment, what would some of those things be as it relates to future work and the context of our conversation that we've just gone through?
I think some of the biggest things that kind of come to mind to me are going to be some of those key words that we've kind of thrown out throughout the day. Things like focusing on skills. You know, how do we think about what, if you're a listener and you're thinking about your growth, you know, think about, what do you want to master? What are the things you're okay with not mastering? And determine how you want to get better at those things. Find someone who you feel is a master there and learn from them. You know, that's how we want to start thinking about our growth today. as organizations out there are starting to think about how they get better, intentionality, thinking, being very intentful about how you work. How do you think about improvement? You know, we talked about the employee surveys. How do you intentionally spend time doing changes? And again, you don't have to make big changes. It's like the old adage of, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You don't have to make everything better at once. Small things, and then continue to iterate on that. Build a pattern, build a ritual around that. And then I think, you know, this idea of behaviors and the evolution of the organization, continue to keep that in mind, people. Like, as you think about it, don't think about what you want to change in your organization. Think about what behavior do you want to see enacted in your organization? If you were to stop and say, like, all right, I would know my organization is growing and evolving if I witnessed this happen in my organization. What would that be? What would it take to start moving in that direction? How can you enact that behavior and start setting some of that example? I think to me, that's what modern work's all about. It's how do we do these little things today to make tomorrow a little better? Because we know that, hey, who knows what will happen in 2-3 years from now, right?
Yeah.
I remember March 2020, we all thought we had a plan. So.
Yeah, exactly right. And thank you for sharing that. And that just kind of brings into focus for me. I mean, we have a company vision, which is empowering people to build a better world of work for all. That's our vision. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, we use this wonderful little acronym called BWOW, the Better World of Work. And that's, you know, the name of our podcast. It's that better world of work. What does that invoke in you when we think about, well, what would one thing be for you that a better world of work for Mark Kroth is? Hmm. What would that be?
I think to me, it would be looking at how do we see more experimentation and more, and to your point earlier, celebrated experimentation. I think we're getting better at that. I think many organizations are starting to embrace it, but I think that's going to be the key for us in the future. Mm-hmm. How do we continue to iterate, experiment, and be okay with, you know, not being perfect with things? And so a better ways of working, a better, you know, future of work is going to be one where we're okay with not getting the right answer at the right time, because guess what? We can experiment again.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, I want to say a huge, huge, huge thanks for your time and the investment of time that you've put into this. You've been exceptionally gracious, and thank you so, so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. I absolutely love this conversation. And to any of your listeners out there, y'all want to continue this all, feel free to reach out, because this is what we're trying to do. We want to talk about what does the work look like the next couple of years, because that's where we got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's in the boardrooms and on the conversations of every CEO and employee around the world right now. So Mark Kroth from Atlassian, thank you so much.
Thank you all.